We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to the Her Hoop Stats podcast. I'm Gabe Ibrahim, and I'm talking WNBA free agency with Richard Cohen of Her Hoop Stats. And you can find all of his work on herhoopstats.substack.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Her Hoop Stats. You should be subscribed to our YouTube channel and subscribe to us wherever you get podcasts, and our like Twitter names will appear. And you should definitely follow us because we've broken some salary news this year.
Lots of it this year, yeah.
Yeah, Richard's been on a tear. He's gotten a lot of the salaries out there, and that's pretty much what we're going to be talking about today, because there's been a lot of interesting contracts given out and trades made so far in WNBA free agency. Today, the big news is that Tina Charles is going to Phoenix. She signed with the Mercury for $108,000. This comes on the heels of Phoenix trading for Diamond DeShields and then signing her to a two-year contract starting at $150,000. They also traded Bria Hartley a second-round pick this year, their first-round pick next year, and the first-round pick, their second-round pick in 2023 as well, for the rights to Diamond DeShields. So I think they're good moves out of context, but I think they're bad moves in context. Do you agree with that?
So do you not like the team you're expecting Phoenix to put on the floor this season?
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, because it's plenty of talent. Like, this team could figure it out. But we're talking about, all right, let's say a starting five. We're going to have Skylar Diggins-Smith, Diana Taurasi, Diamond DeShields / Brianna Turner.
She's not a three. They're going to start the Shields.
Okay, so they'll start the Shields. Tina Charles and Brittany Griner. Oh, man. I mean, like, just looking at that lineup, you could easily, in your head, starting lineup, we can get into the ending lineup later, but that's going to be a lineup that you can attack with pick and rolls all the time and just score so efficiently that I think it's going to be really difficult for them to be a top defense. You know, obviously, Brittany Griner can clean up a lot of messes, but if they put her out in the pick and roll, it's going to be extremely difficult for this team to defend. I don't not like it, but I think just in context, this team is going to struggle with a lot on both sides of the ball.
They're definitely going to be interesting. I don't think they're necessarily a terrible defensive team. I mean, Charles was certainly reasonable in Washington last year.
Oh, wow.
Albeit
sorry, you just know, got some news. This is going to happen plenty of times on this podcast. As we
did, you see the Jasmine Jones?
Jones just got released. Just got cut in New York. So that just broke. We'll talk about New York later. And they waived Leon Odom.
Odom's gone as well. Yeah. As I mentioned the other day, New York didn't have room to do anything without suspending or cutting somebody. So they've obviously decided those are the first two to go.
All right, I'll put that down on our sheet to talk about from New York. And again, that's going to happen plenty of times in this podcast. But continue on Phoenix. So you're saying you don't think they're necessarily a terrible defensive team?
I think that they have the possibility to be an acceptable defensive team,
okay,
given that the Shields has always had the tools, and especially if she's healthier this year than she was last year, then who knows? I didn't think Kia Nurse was that great for Phoenix last year, so the Shields could probably do a reasonable facsimile of what they got from Nurse. Offensively, there's obviously a lot of talent there. If they're healthy and in one piece, then Charles will probably play around the three-point line just as much or even more than she did in Washington, because the Shields still isn't a great three-point shooter, never has been.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be on Charles to be the extra sort of range threat alongside Taurasi and Diggins Smith rather than getting it from the other perimeter player. So, yeah, like I said, they're interesting. I wouldn't say they're perfect, but I do applaud what Jim Pittman's got done in Phoenix, given that they came into the offseason looking completely hamstrung and it looked like they were going to struggle to do anything. They moved off that Bria Hartley deal and it opened up all of this. They've got Charles to take way more than market value. The Shields at a reasonable price. It's a reasonable gamble deal. And yeah, they've managed to reshape it for Taurasi's presumably final season in a way that didn't look possible a couple of weeks ago. So I think they're more interesting and better than I was expecting them to be. So well done to Pittman for getting that done.
No, yeah. And then also we have to applaud him for the Kia Vaughn trade. I don't understand why someone gave up a third round pick for Kia Vaughn, but getting anything for that was honestly incredible. No, and I agree. Like, yeah, you're right. We have to give him credit for changing the team without any sort of without the assets to do this. He did it. And I think it deserves a ton of credit. And I think, you know, Tina giving up money, as you mentioned on Twitter, it could be a problem for the union, but it is, you know, applaudable, I think, from a perspective of a fan.
I don't think it's a big deal because if players want to take less than what they could get on the open market, I don't see in each individual case, I don't see how you can really have a problem with that because they're making the decision for their own wallets and their own teams. So what can you really say? You make that a possibility with when you decide to have this structure of team and roster building across the league.
No, and I don't personally have a problem with it because, like you're saying, everyone had the whole point of the CBA is to make your own, you know, decisions. If you really want to live in Washington, D.C. for whatever reason, like me, then yeah, I'd probably take less to live here because I live here. But
well, apparently Elizabeth Williams agrees with you as well.
Yeah, I didn't read her Players Tribune article, but she definitely, I think she, well, I don't know where her offers were. Maybe it wasn't that much less, but assuming that Mercedes Russell and Stephen Dilson got what they,
yeah,
won't assume that was there in theory for, or close to it for Williams. For Phoenix, I think it's just another year of them swinging for the fences to get a championship, and they got damn close last year. So
yeah, it almost worked, yeah.
It's a case where it's, I think you have to understand their motivations. They have a lot more riding on this year than they do in the future, but that future looks tough. It's going to be very tough to rebuild this team anytime soon. So if this is Diana Taurasi's last year and Brittany Griner, you know, has always flirted with not playing in the WNBA and she's not going to have a contract after this season, you know, we're looking at a team that doesn't have much in the coffers to rebuild. So they're just going to have to, they've continued doubling down for how many years? How many years have they traded their first round pick? This is their third year with single selection, I believe. Yeah. So they just keep doubling down because they think it's the end of Diana Taurasi, and maybe this year it is, but I am growing more and more concerned about this team's future because they just don't have any draft assets in this year's draft or next year's draft.
But it's kind of what you see with teams like the Lakers in the NBA. Yeah. They don't value their draft picks much because they say we're a draw. We'll reload via free agency. We'll get someone in, and yeah, we'll just go hunting and bring in people like the Shields and Charles via via the open market. So what's the point of draft picks?
Yeah. No, and I get, well, how's that working out for the Lakers this year, though?
Oh, yeah, it doesn't always work. One thing that I liked about the three-team trade is all three are kind of, or certainly Chicago and Phoenix, are gambling on themselves being better than the other teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Phoenix are saying, well, we're going to be good, so we don't care about our pick. Here, you have it. Chicago are saying, well, we think we're going to be pretty good and better than Phoenix, so we'd rather have their pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then Indiana get Chicago's pick because apparently Tamika Catchings wants 5 different tries to be terrible in the draft.
She needs to cut 3 more players from her draft.
Yeah, who will all be gone within 18 months. But yeah, I liked that, because it's much more interesting when while you're rooting for your own teams to be good, you're also rooting for someone else to be bad. It gives you a dual interest, and I know this as a Miami Dolphins fan from recent years, that it adds an extra level when you both want your own team to win and someone else to lose on any given weekend.
Yes, and we found that out from recent lawsuits as well. read the Dolphins. No, and look, I think it totally, like I said, it makes sense for what they're trying to do. But the other thing I don't like about this move is that it takes Breanna Turner off the floor a lot more. Mm. And she's
the rotations are going to be interesting, definitely. Yeah, I mean, people are worried about who's going to start, but it's more about who you put on the floor, how the players match up together, and like you were saying, are they going to try 3 big systems where Turner, Charles, and Griner are all on the floor together? It doesn't seem like a great idea to me, but I wouldn't be surprised if they try it at least occasionally.
I mean, I think they have to. I think they'll have to, because if you're trying to get your 5 best players on the floor, I mean, no offense to Diamond Shields, I just think Breanna Turner is better. So if you're trying to get your 5 best players on the floor, she's part of that 5. And I don't think it's crazy for her to play small forward sometimes.
I don't think it's in any way the best use of her skills, no. Though. She's a post defender who can switch out to help if she needs to, and that makes her a better defender in general. But you want her defending 4s and 5s, not 2s and 3s.
Yeah. No, that's my big problem with this is, like, not only are you putting Turner in a bad position defensively if she plays, you know, the 3 at all, but you're also, like you mentioned earlier, like Tina Charles is going to be on the perimeter. And while she did more on the perimeter than she has in the past in Washington, it wasn't great. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Tina's going to get the ball and, you know, just hit all her 3s. She was still mostly paint bound. So I think you're putting her out of position. You're putting Turner out of position. You're going to affect whatever Griner's doing. I don't think there's any way to affect what Diana Taurasi does on offense. She's just going to do it and everyone else has to deal with it. But I do think there is, it's just a lot of ripple effects for the Shields, Turner, Charles, BG in terms of their roles. And I just don't know. The ultimate question is, how much better does this make their championship odds? I'm not sure I'm at the point where I'm saying this really pushes them into either a new tier of contenders or just like above other teams.
One thing it does help cover is for injuries.
Yes. Yeah.
This team has both aging players and players with checkered injury histories. So the more depth you can get where you can give these players a night off and still have a decent chance to win, or just when they get hurt and inevitably miss a month or something, you're not immediately completely screwed, then yeah. So that's good, because certainly last year they didn't have a lot of cover. And so, yeah, they've got a bit more now, because someone on this team is going to get hurt. And we've got a really compact season this year as well. So you'd probably be giving Taurasi days off, even if she doesn't get actually injured. You'd want her to take, you know, when you're playing 3 games in 4 days or 4 games in a week, you don't want to use her in all of them.
Yeah. So, but are you going to give BG rest? I feel like BG doesn't really do rest.
I mean, but it's the coach's job to tell the players to take rest, whether they want to or not. Sometimes you got to do the stuff that's good for them, whether they like it or not.
Also, we just got the corresponding New York move, so they re-signed Becca Allen to a multi-year deal.
Yeah.
I don't have the numbers on that. So
neither do I yet.
We'll try to find that out probably after this podcast, though. It's hard to talk and text at the same time. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think I'm just a little worried because I don't want to see Turner sidelined on this team. I think she's really, really good, and she was a big reason why they got to the finals last year. And I really love just like dominant BG. Like, she was just so good last season that I think this takes a little bit away from what she does, but it also takes away, like you're saying, from what she has to do. So there maybe is an upside that they're more fresh in the postseason. I don't remember how many games they played in last year's regular season. They played most 30, of them.
32, I think. Oh, you mean how many?
Yeah, those players. I'm looking at it now. Yeah. Skylar played 32, Turner played 32, Griner played 30, and Taurasi played 17.
Yeah, it was DT that actually was out for a while.
So then in the if DT is out or resting, and we can move on from Phoenix a little bit. If DT's out or resting, then do you think they should run with that like three big lineup with the Shields at the two, Turner at the three, Charles at the four, BG at the four?
I mean, like I said, I wouldn't, but I fully expect them to try it occasionally, but I don't think we'll see it much. I think they'll be, you know, it would be a Shea Petty, a Sophie Cunningham, and whoever else they might still be looking to add, because Charles signed so cheap that there is some space left there beyond just minimum deals to add someone else.
Yeah, and we have Phoenix at $216,000 in cap space, like $600 more than that. And then their maximum bid for another player would be $95,681. I guess they could get, well, they can't really get off anyone. There's no one to get off unless they... Well,
and there's the Kia Nurse mess as well, which who knows what's going to happen there.
Do you think Tina's number is to accommodate keeping Nurse on the roster?
I'm not sure. I mean, the thing is that it's a very specific number. It's not like she signed for something round, like 100 or 110. So you wonder if there's already something else specific planned, because they obviously signed the Shields, made that move knowing what Tina was going to be willing to take. I feel like all these moves were made in concert. You don't make the Shields trade and then go to Tina, hey, how would you feel about 108,000?
So
I wouldn't be surprised if, I don't know, Odyssey Sims is already agreed to take 80,000 or something like that to fill out the rest of the roster.
Why not replace one former New York Liberty wing with another former New York Liberty wing in Leon Odom, just got released?
Well, yeah, or Jazz Jones. Sure. Yeah, I mean, someone like that. Yeah, sure. That just deepens your options at the very least, and with cheap players likely as well. Although you wouldn't be totally surprised if Jones or Odom got claimed on waivers. It might not clear.
Yeah, I wonder who. Well, we'd have to do a lot more. I have all the cap space on one sheet now. Let's see who has space for that. It seems like pretty much everyone could have space for that.
Yeah, I mean, they're both still on rookie scale deals, so they're pretty cheap.
Well, maybe Indiana could, except I don't know how much they signed Emma Cannon for. Right before it got on, they could have signed Emma Cannon for the max. Who knows?
Yes, yeah, they could. Let's hope not, for the sake of every Indiana fan's heart and brain and general well-being.
Do you want to? Is there anything more on Phoenix that we should get to?
I think we've covered the Mercury in enough depth at this point.
Yeah, we'll cover the Mercury plenty. During the season, I'm sure. Whether it's good or bad. Speaking of another team we're going to cover throughout the season, let's talk about their finals opponent, the Chicago Sky. I'll read out their moves and then give you their stats on cap space for the moment, although Lord knows that could change at any moment. So what they've done, unofficially, they've signed Emma Mieseman and Crystal Bradford. Those are reported, not official yet. They've also reportedly re-signed Kalia Copper again. That's not official yet, right? I didn't miss that.
Yep.
Okay. They also lost Steph Dolson to New York. That one's official. And then they did the trade where they sent out Diamond's rights, their 2022 first or 2023 first, received a 2023 first from Phoenix and Julie Alamand. And that brings us to them having $847,000 in cap space, and they can bid up to the Supermax. Obviously, though, know, what's going in over all of this is that Courtney Vandersloot and Allie Quigley remain unsigned. They're reporting from Holly Rowe on the free agency special that Courtney Vandersloot is considering a deal from ECAT to not come over to the WNBA this year, similar to what happened with Diane Taurasi. I gave my thoughts and feelings on that on the Courtside podcast last on Wednesday. So, Richard, what do you think of what's going on in Chicago?
Well, as long as they eventually work it out, I'm fine with it. You know, I've always liked Alamond. I was a fan of hers and talking her up before she ever played in the WNBA. So once she got there and proved what she was worth in the one season in Indiana, that's a nice pickup. Exactly when we'll see her, you know, James Wade is claiming that she's going to be there in 2022, mm-hmm. even if she's late, but she's definitely going to miss the whole of camp and could easily miss a month of the season, because she plays for one of the best teams in France and their playoffs don't end until early June. So, and then, you know, even if she flies over immediately, you then have to get used to the team and everything else. So it might be a while before she's a useful central piece in Chicago. So you hope that she's just the backup, because if they're hoping she's going to be their starting point guard, it's going to be a while. I'm surprised by the whole thing. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me that what the hell can he have offered that can possibly have been considered wildly disrespectful? How low do you go before just thinking it's laughable to even offer it? I don't understand how you end up in a situation where you know exactly how much money you've got for four players. It's, You know the number that you have for Meisman, Copper, Quigley, and Vandersloot in total. I don't understand how you get to that stage without having already talked to Vandersloot and Quigley and said, are you willing to take a combined $350,000 between the two of you or something like that? You surely talk to them first. It doesn't make sense that you get to this stage without it all being under control and discussed. I don't get it.
I think it's because someone's trying to lie to us. I'm with you. I don't see how there could be a wildly disrespectful offer. I could see her saying, hey, I got lowballed, and it is wildly disrespectful that I did not get offered the extra 28 grand for my services this year, for example, if that's what it is, I have no idea. But I do think it has, we talked about the prioritization thing on the Courtside podcast. And then I talked to you about it on Slack. And you're saying that the Russian season ends substantially early enough that it would not be a problem if Courtney wants to play with ECAT and play in the WNBA, right? That's your understanding of
it? Yeah, I don't think the Russian season is scheduled to finish any later this year than it was last year. And it was done by April 27th last year, which is, you know, she might miss a few days of camp, which in 2023 would be a fine. Mm-hmm. But Ekaterinburg will be paying her a fortune. So missing a few days of WNBA camp and maybe getting fined a little bit for that would not be a big deal in comparison to how much she'd be getting paid by UMMC. I don't get it, because someone must have fed that line to Holly Rowe. You presume it's coming from Vandersloot or Vandersloot's camp. Mm-hmm. And what's the purpose of that to give? Because if Wade's explained it to Vandersloot and Quigley, explained the situation, and they've agreed to it, then what's the purpose of saying I've been lowballed or I've been given a disrespectful offer? I don't. What are you trying to gain from that?
Well, and the other thing is, if it was a disrespectful offer, you could go to another team and stick it. If you want to stick it to James Wade that way, that's the way you do it. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it has to be a leverage play for, I think, something more than money. And that's what I was theorizing about the prioritization rule, about using this leverage now to, I don't know exactly what she could get from, you know, maybe it's, you know, the Chicago organization bring this up to the league and pushing the league to make changes to this rule. I know Courtney Vandersloot is represented by the same agent that represents Brittany Griner and Breanna Stewart and Jewel Lloyd. And, you know, she's been pulling. It's Lindsay Kagawakolas from Wasserman, right? Yeah, she's Wasserman.
Yeah.
And she's pulling a lot of the strings this offseason. So I think this may have been a leverage play, not only for Vandersloot, but for a lot of different players, and pushing the narrative that prioritization is bad because it's taking away part of our revenue stream. Potentially. I don't know. I don't know if, like, the Russian league, for example, I was told when the whole prioritization rule came into effect with CBA, like, by some people who work in European basketball, that, you know, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a stare down between the European leagues and the WNBA. So maybe there's something that the Russian league is saying, hey, like, you we're going to put in a requirement the same that the WNBA has. So if you want to play here, you can't play there. So it could be something like that. I don't know that yet. That's just stuff I heard, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago at this point. So I do think it has to do something with that, though, because I'm with you. Like, I don't see another logical explanation, because the money is extremely clear. Like, you knew the money coming in. So there's no way he could have loped, unless he, and I can't imagine James Wade is that bad of a GM that he didn't do that, right?
I don't know. Like I said, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So that is one explanation for this situation that doesn't make sense, is that Wade screwed up.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree with you. You wouldn't think a GM, you would think a GM would do the maths and talk to Vandersloot and Quigley before you even agree to Emma Meisman. If Vandersloot says, I'm not signing for anything other than the Supermax, that's just her position from the start, then that's the first thing you take into the equation. Because you don't give up Vandersloot to then re-sign Copper and go and get Meisman, because then you're turning your franchise over to Dana Evans at the point, or you're hoping you can get Alan Mond and hoping she shows up and that she fits in for most of the season. Vandersloot has to be one of their top priorities, you would have thought, from the very start of this whole process.
Well, and they would have cored Vandersloot too. I think probably. So I don't know. It's probably more smoke and mirrors. And maybe about something that has nothing to do with the contract situation. Or maybe it does. But it has been reported by Christina Williams that Vandersloot and Quigley are likely to, or I think it was very likely to return. It's not a done deal, certainly.
Yeah, people that get these things right on most occasions have said they think that they're going to be coming back. Yeah. And yeah, just to go back to what you were saying a minute ago, the prioritization rules are in the CBA. It's all in black and white at this point. So it's not like Chicago could add a clause into Vandersloot's contract saying, yeah, that doesn't apply to you, show up whenever you like. It's literally the rule says the WNBA can fine you or suspend you if you don't show up at time X. It's not going to be down to the team to enforce that rule. The league can do it based on when you show up.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's kind of been this public pressure to get Chicago and or James Wade and or whoever has the most power with the league in that situation to say, hey, you guys need to do something about this. We need to come together and strike an amendment, at least a small one.
I mean, then they shouldn't have signed the CBA in the first place. I mean, I remember Necker talking about these rules specifically when they were announcing the new CBA. They talked about how it was part of the negotiations and part of agreeing the new deal and encouraging players to prioritize, as the rule is named, prioritize the WNBA over overseas contracts. Of course, Necker and people like Sue Bird in the WNBPA's sort of hierarchy don't go overseas anymore. So maybe they were making some rules that they thought were going to help them out and not necessarily help out their the whole of their player base.
I think it was a hopeful, it was an aspirational goal to say, hey, we're going to work with the European leagues to make our season longer. And then we're not as, like, we can compete without being in competition for the players, right? So I think that was the aspirational goal, at least on the WNBA side. But yeah, I agree. It's like, you look at the players who were most involved in negotiating, and most of them don't go overseas, don't have that huge revenue stream that it could potentially be cut off in two years.
And the working relationship between FIBA and the WNBA has never exactly been simpatico. They just do what they like, and hopefully the whole thing fits together at some point, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're heading towards a time, maybe after the CBA, where they're going to be in direct competition at some point, right? At some point, we're going to have to make the WNBA season longer. We're going to have to actually have a much longer season if you want to continue the growth that the league has seen. So eventually, they will be in direct competition for the players. So,
you feel like that's part of the aim is that, yeah, when you're trying to pay people more, you're trying to ultimately pay them enough that they don't want to play anywhere else as well. Personally, I don't want to make the season an awful lot longer. I would spread it out a little more. American sports play far too many regular season games, just in general. and they don't even matter. Over here, we have a season, and the team that does best in the season wins the league. In the US, you play a regular season, and it's basically the preseason, because then you have the playoffs, which are the stuff that actually matter at the end. No one remembers that Chicago went 500 last year. No one gives a damn because they won the title.
I don't think we're going to change the entire American sporting industry.
Neither do I. I'm just making my usual argument, old man shouting at cloud. Yeah.
I do like the playoffs, but yeah, definitely. I don't think we need 82 games, but I like oh God, I don't man. Know. No, yeah, we don't need 82 games. Maybe like a 42 game season in actual basketball season. That's all I'm asking for. Like, let's start in January and go until April.
You want to play in the winter? Okay.
I like playing in the winter.
That's, you're probably going to have to break off from the NBA in order to end up with that schedule. So that might be quite a long way off, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think just like that is the idea in the future, is like, we will have to compete with them directly at some point. If we want this league to continue growing and be where everyone talks about where it has to be, they'll compete. So I don't know. I think you're kind of in between a rock and a hard place for the WNBA, because you can either say, because the owners now are going to have to give some, they're going to have to get something in return for if they change the prioritization rule, whatever it is, they're going to have to get something in return, because that's how collective bargaining works. You're not just going to take a loss. But then it's like, well, how are you going to balance this out and also make everyone happy? Because if you don't change the rule, you're going to lose a lot of players. But if you do change the rule, you're going to kind of, you know, kneecap that growth that we're talking about to a certain extent. But that's for a different, that may be for a future thing. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
And just to be clear to everybody, the prioritization rules in the CBA do not kick in until 2023. So there are no fines and no suspensions coming on that basis this season.
And the big suspension comes in 2024, right?
They're sort of phased in a little bit in 2023, and then the whole thing comes in 2024.
And that won't affect younger players because they're on the rookie scale contract.
Anyone 0, 1, or 2 years of experience can do what they like. The rules don't apply in the prioritization rules.
So we talked about them for 14 minutes and really haven't talked about them on the court. Chicago Sky.
Because none of them have signed, so we have no solidity about who's actually going to be on the team.
If we assume everyone is back on the team,
yeah,
this is a damn good team. I mean, I think they were a damn good team last year. Obviously, they won the title. It's not a controversial statement. But do you think Emma is a really big upgrade over Steph Dolson? Do you think the combination of Bradford and Alamond are a really big upgrade over the Shields?
Yeah, I mean, as with Alamond, I'm a big fan of Misabin. I think she's a more skilled offensive player than Dolson. She's a different kind of player in that, more of a four than a five, more of an offensive threat from sort of mid-range and in deep in the post. But Dolson gave them a really big body who played the five and helped out. I think it's an upgrade. but it's a change as well. I enjoyed Bradford. I wrote about Bradford several times during the course of last season. I think that's a fun pickup, and obviously the only reason she was available was because of the mess that happened in Atlanta with that whole the whole fight and them letting her go. So yeah, that should be more depth for them. Again, might not be dirt cheap in that, and that might cut into their space as well if she's not going to take the minimum, because that then cuts another, what if she takes 75, something like that, 80,
yeah,
then that cuts another 15,000-20,000 off that total that we were talking about for the four players. They've still got to work out. But yeah, assuming all of those players come back, it's once again a team that's capable of beating anyone on their day, but shaky, maybe, that they can break down on occasion and things might not work. There's, because like I said, they were a 500 team last season, and you know, Candace Parker has been known to pick up injuries and miss a bunch of games. Azaree Stevens misses games. Quigley's getting old.
Vandersloot's getting old.
Vandersloot's getting older, yeah. So you wonder whether they might have injury and depth issues. But yeah, there's a lot of talent there. As with Phoenix, they're going to be fun to watch and a threat in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think they're a team that's they're about the playoffs. I don't think they care about the regular season. Like, we might see a lot of Ruby Hubbard in the regular season. I'd support that. She's actually, I was pretty impressed with her last year. But I think it's a difference though. You're right. Like, I think Emma and Steph, a lot of people see a big white center and think, you know, they're the same player, but I think they're very different in the ways they defend and in the ways they play offense. So I think it's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a lot of adjustments in the regular season, but for them, you know, I think they'll be just fine in the regular season. And then we'll see them in the playoffs, and we'll see if they can recapture that magic from last season. But man, it's a good deal if you can get what, three finals MVPs on the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really four, because Courtney Vandersloot should have been the finals MVP last year, but
then Copper wouldn't have been. So
I know, but
back,
just in
then
mind.
You're back down to three, but
I know, but we're trying to get people excited. We're trying to get people excited on the podcast. Okay.
Yes, but we know my role is generally to stop people being excited, and
that's why it works well on the show. All right, so that's Chicago. Anything else in Chicago?
Sort it out, James.
Yeah, it's really annoying that we had to come on this podcast on Friday. We left until Friday so that we could talk about more things. Hopefully this Vandersloot thing was done. And it's not. So James, throw us a bone here. We need more content. Let's move over to New York though, because I just got numbers from Jackie Powell, who reported it that Rebecca Allen is getting $141,000 this year, $136,000 next year, $136,850. In 2023, has there been another descending contract given out?
Not this offseason. That's the first one this offseason. Not a surprise that comes from Jonathan Kolb, who used to work in the league office, so therefore knows how all of these things work and knows how to work the system. So
he wrote the rules. So one would hope.
He wrote some of them and implemented some of them over the years. So yeah, he should know how it all goes. It does feel sometimes like there are GMs around the WNBA who don't really know what's going on half the time. He is one who you would think should know what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I think he did well to do that. And I think that's to keep space open in their pursuit of Breanna Stewart yet again next year. We both talked about Seattle having the issue now that Jewel Lloyd is cored and she will be cored next season. So they will not have a cord designation available for Breanna Stewart unless they trade Jewel Lloyd, which seems unlikely. So Stewie's going to be a free agent. She's already met with New York. Seems like they're going to try to go after her next year. At least I would presume that's why that contract is ascending.
Well, I mean, they've also got They've also got Whitcomb coming off the books at the end of this season, which will open up some space.
Yeah, and we'll see. I don't know who's. I haven't looked at next year's free agency class yet, other than Brianna Stewart, obviously. But I mean, I think there could be other people, and one would assume that if Stewie's coming, she may want Sammy Whitcomb around. So potentially, that's more space just to fit in people. But we talked about this in the mock off season podcast about how much flexibility New York has in terms of keeping their young players while also chasing these bigger names. And they pick up Steph Dolson for $160,000 each year. And they re-sign Rebecca Allen. Do you think this, like, do you think Dolson really changes their trajectory next year?
I mean, the primary thing that she does is change likely that sort of how they're playing, because they tried to play so small and so fast under Walt Hopkins that Howard was a three, was a five, and then your four was whoever happened to be the tallest of the various wings they had on the floor, and then you worked from there. Assuming they're signing they've given Dolson a significant amount of money, so you think she may be the starting five and Howard the four, which would make them a far more traditional lineup. And then you become a more typical team that can play fast, but that doesn't have to play fast and doesn't have to be so unusual in its approach. If they're really going to take a step forward, it's going to be dependent on them being healthy and Sabrina Ionescu being the superstar that we thought she could be when she was coming out of college. You don't generally get good to great teams in the WNBA without at least one superstar being on your roster. And right now, B'Nai Jelani and Natasha Howard are good. They're both, you might even put them in the star category, but you wouldn't put them in the superstar category.
Yeah, and you wouldn't put them in the elite.
Top tier where, and Ionescu looks like the one that would have to get there and that would take them there. So I think I saw, I forget who it was, but someone wrote an article basically titled "The Liberty are going as far as Sabrina can take them." And I tend to agree that's your main point of growth is how healthy she's going to be and how good she's going to be.
Yeah, I think that's right on the money. I mean, it is all on Sabrina, and she had her, you know, obviously first year completely gone to injury. Last year, she did have injury problems coming into season, but even when she was healthy, you know, it didn't feel like she really had that sort of star grasp on the game, and she made big plays. I think she was like really a good point guard in this league. I don't think that's like a controversial statement. I think she was good, but she does need to be the superstar. Unless they brought in Brianna Stewart this year, or if they bring in Brianna Stewart next year, that solves all the problems. But for now, she definitely has to be the one that takes a step up. And also, did you see if B'Nai Jelani was playing on a torn meniscus last year?
But did she have surgery just after the end of the year? Yeah. I mean,
Yeah. She's going to be ready for camp, but she was playing on a torn meniscus last year. Well,
I mean, you could see during the season that if you looked at her split, she got worse month after month after sort of people were talking about her as an MVP candidate at the start of the year. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that there was an injury, underlying injury there that left her sort of wearing down.
Yeah, but I like the team in terms of the roster construction. I think it's going to be a nice sort of blank slate for Sandy Brondello. And I don't think she's going to be so stringent on what she wants to do that. I think she'll work something around these players. And the talent's really good. And I think I see there's a playoff team here, but really to get to that next level, you need Sabrina Ionescu to be a superstar. And even to get into the playoffs, I think you're going to need some of these, like Jocelyn Willoughby's going to have to be a player. Mikaela Onwuegbe is going to have to continue growing. Dee Dee Richards is going to have to be a big part of this team. I think they're good. I think they're better. I think they do need to take, like, now is time, starting to be the time where we need to see some return on the investment that the team has made in these young players, and especially Sabrina, for me.
it does feel like they're still not sure what they've got in these young players. We just, mm-hmm. like we said at the start of the podcast, they've just waived two of them and given up on a couple. But, I mean, Willoughby obviously missed last season injured, so they don't know what they've got there. Onyinwere was playing half of last year out of position, even while winning Rookie of the Year. Can Richards actually shoot? Or were those, like, because she had a couple last year? And if that was just a flash in the pan, then can she be a productive WNBA player while having limited offense? I mean, there's still other unknowns as well. You don't know what you're getting from Asia Durr, if anything at all. That she obviously was supposed to be a building block for them before the whole horrible COVID issues. You don't know whether she's going to be on the roster. You don't know. You might get a good player. You might get absolutely nothing. We don't know whether Marine Johannes is going to sign and show up.
That's what I want to talk about. Because that, I think that changes things for me. Does it change, would it change things for you if she came over?
Maybe. I'd love to see it. I mean, we're both big fans of her. She's a hell of a player, but we've seen her for very limited minutes in the WNBA, and international players have a history of struggling to adapt to WNBA basketball when they've only got very limited time to accept and understand mm-hmm. the differences between the leagues and the differences between the game. And again, she's playing in France.
Yeah.
So you've got the same issues we talked about with Alabond in terms of getting into camp or showing up for the first month of the season.
Yeah, I'm don't think she'd show up to camp just because of that French season. But getting her here is just another player who can kind of light it up. Sammy Wickham can light it up. Najalena can light it up. But I just want any more of that talent just in case those two have an off night. Because when those two had off nights last season and the times where Natasha Howard wasn't around, this team was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, really, they could reach really low depths. So I need someone to raise that floor a little bit.
Yeah, you add more people who can break out on any given night, then you give yourself other options. Just definitely a good idea. I would love to see her. She is a very entertaining basketball player.
Oh yeah, from a content perspective, that would be an amazing ad just for all of us. We would have so many insane highlights. She also throws some like really bad passes. I'm not sure how well it's gonna mesh with Sandy Cordella. But right, she does. She throws some terrible passes.
She throws some great passes as well. This is the thing. She's one of those players who sees the pass and is willing to risk the turnover to make the great pass.
I feel like I don't know enough about soccer really to make this comparison, but I feel like she's kind of a soccer player in that way. It's like she has the brilliant idea. Whether she can execute it or not is immaterial. She's gonna do the idea that she has in her mind.
Mm. The problem is you have to see it and then make it while it's still there. The problem is if you see it and then your brain has to take a second or two to process it and think about whether you should be throwing it, and then you throw it, the hole's gone and you can't make that pass anymore. So yeah, you have to do it instantly. But that's part of what makes her fun, is the whole risk reward.
I don't think she's ever thought, should I try this pass? In just in watching her minutes, like, she's never thought that.
No, because the ball's already gone from her hand before she's thought about it.
And honestly, it would be nice to get her around Sabrina, because I feel like Sabrina actually does need that a little bit. Like, she may be thinking a little too much. So I'd like to see it. That's all I got in New York. Anything else in New York?
No, I think we're good. All right. I think maybe they wanted to do a little more in free agency than we've seen so far. So, but that was what they had possible in the end.
Well, and getting a meeting with Breanna Stewart, and no one has reported another meeting with Breanna Stewart.
No, but I mean, there were also reports that Jewel Lloyd spoke to them as well. So yeah, they were trying, as you do. I mean, and like we said, that people keep referring, and I did it as well, to the Chelsea Gray thing where. Mm-hmm. Vegas talked to her when she was a free agent and she went back to LA for another year, and then they got her 12 months later. So you set the groundwork, and in terms of the front office, you hope you're still in a job at that point and then can sign her at some later point, even if you don't get her when you're talking to them the first time.
No, I think they're pretty safe unless they go like, I don't know, 2-20 again. Then that could be an issue. But I think they'll be pretty safe just because of the idea that Breanna Stewart can come. Because if you have a shot to get Breanna Stewart, like, don't change anything. Just wait. If you don't get her, then you have to change plans. But
I don't. I mean, they could fire Jonathan Kolb and hire Marta Zsagai as the new GM. that might help bring in Breanna Stewart.
That's Breanna Stewart's wife, for everyone that may not know. But I mean, well, then you go down like that, and that'd be tough for the New York front office. But yeah, we'll see what happens next year. I think they're more interesting next year than they are this year. Okay, we're going long, and that's fine. Everyone's gonna hang out. You guys, you know, watch as much of this podcast as you want.
I mean,
do you want to talk about Seattle? Interesting team, championship caliber, yada yada. Do we want to talk about Los Angeles? Plenty of intrigue there. Or do we want to talk about the team that potentially made the single best move in all of free agency? The Indiana Fever.
I wonder where you were going there. Okay, I mean, sell me on how the Indiana Fever made the best move of free agency.
Okay, I was being more tongue-in-cheek, but they made I think they made a good trade. And relative to expectations with Indiana, that is arguably the best move in free agency. If we're doing it relative to expectations, I would say the trade that Indiana made to acquire, I don't even know if we could say acquire Bria Hartley. They got Bria Hartley. They also got a first-round pick this year, a second-round pick this year, a first-round pick this year, next year, and a second-round pick next year for Julie Alamand and cap space. Obviously, I went to Phoenix. I love it. I mean, that's exactly what they should be doing. I think that's why I love this move so much, is that they should be collecting assets and using their cap space in that way rather than signing Jonte Lavender to a $175,000 contract for 3 years, right? Now, I do want to mention, though, like right before we got on this podcast, there was a press release that said that the Indiana Fever had signed Emma Cannon. I'm extremely anxious to see the numbers on that, but assuming it's not something crazy, I like this as a use of cap space. I like it as an asset play. I think they have 3 first-round picks this year. At some point, a blind squirrel has to find the nut and keep it. And hopefully, that is this year for Indiana, and they will find a draft pick, and they will keep them, and that draft pick will at least stay for their rookie contract. So that's what I got.
I get where you're coming from. And in a vacuum, I can see the positives to that trade. Absolutely. I'm not sure that Alamond wanted to be in Indiana anymore. And obviously with international players, you're always working on the problem of they may not show up if they don't want to be in that particular city. So they only become an asset if they're willing to play wherever you have them or wherever you send them. So that may have been part of the push to send her to Chicago, where there obviously is now a whole Belgian contingent. I worry that they're falling into the same hole that we've seen in Dallas in recent years, where they already have young players on the roster. They already cut Gondrzik again. I mean, they've still got Wilson, and they've got reserve qualifying offers out to people like Bernadette Hatar and that Chelsea Perry on a training camp contract. They've got young players on the roster already. And there's only so many roster spots in this league. You don't have these two-way contracts that the NBA have to send people to the G League or anything like that. So having 5 picks in the next 2 drafts, how many of those players are they even going to be able to keep? And as you said, how many are going to stick? Because unless you can package them and turn this like 3 picks into 1 player or trade a couple of pieces as well as a pick to then turn into 1, unless you can make a consolidation trade, the kind of move that Dallas hasn't been able to make for the last 3 years, however much they've wanted to, then all of the assets depreciate, and because it all becomes just a mess that you can't use. Or you trade people and then you end up cutting them, whether they wanted to or not, because there's no room. So, yeah, I see what you're saying, that there's positives here. And Bria Hartley's not a terrible player, you know. And they actually didn't just waive her immediately like they did with Odyssey Sims last year when they made a similar move to swallow someone into their own cap space. So Yeah. Like you said, I like it a lot more than wasting your cap space on veterans like they did last year. At least this has potential positives rather than looking terrible from the moment they did it.
Yeah. No, they need picks. They really do. Because if you're releasing them after 2 years for all of them, then yeah, you're going to just need, all you need is one. All you need is one really great draft pick.
That's most likely to be the number two pick that they've already got this year that is going to be hard to screw up, according to most prognosticators. I don't watch enough college basketball to have a view on this, but from what I'm told, this is at the very least a two-player draft. Some people think it's a three-player draft, but if you take one of those consensus people, hopefully they don't suck.
Yes. I think we're talking about Nelissa Smith, Ryan Howard, Shakir Austin. I probably expect Ryan Howard to go to Washington with number one. But, you know, yes, that would be what the logic tells you. However, I mean, coming into the 2019 draft, the Lauren Cox draft.
2020, yeah.
Yeah, Lauren Cox was like the consensus number three pick up and down the board.
This is why I don't criticize Catchings much for that pick, yeah.
No,
went where everyone thought she was going to go.
And honestly, I don't know what happened with Gondrzik. Well, she wasn't that good to start with. But then, like, she just kind of disappeared on them. So I feel bad for them in that regard, too. But the Lauren Cox thing, that was the consensus pick. So if they draft Nelissa Smith as a consensus pick, we still have, based on recent history, a large likelihood of it not working out. So I just think getting the lotto tickets, though, for me is really important. And then you figure it out later. The only thing that I really dislike is that they still have Lavender and Robinson on the books through this year and next year. Those are really the only two moves on this roster, affecting this roster right now, that I really, really have problems with, because Tierra McCallum is going to be a restricted free agent after this year.
Yep.
And I mean, I don't personally know where you're going with the Kelsey Mitchell, Tierra McCallum core, but they certainly seem to like it. So unless you're planning to kind of lose McCallum, which maybe you should explore trades this year if you're planning on that, now they're kind of hamstrung for next year, and they will have to release some of those draft picks. So I just like it, though. I like the asset play. I like collecting picks and figuring it out later.
Yeah. If no one wanted to come to Indiana in free agency, then this is one of the best things you can do instead. Basically, you try to use the space in creative ways, and I'm just not totally convinced that it's going to work out well in future anyway, but it does give them possibilities at the very least. And I mean, yeah, I was the Indiana GM in our mock off season, and I did look into what are your offers for McCallum from various places. I'd never got anything that felt worth exploring from our other GMs around the league. But yeah, if you don't think she's your future, then I would agree that now or during the upcoming season is probably when you want to be looking at trading her rather than letting her go into restricted free agency and then either having to match a deal or find some kind of sign and trade.
All right, that's enough on the Indiana.
Yep.
And maybe the last time Indiana is brought up. For the remainder of the offseason. Okay, let's go to Los Angeles. I mean, unless we have something really pressing to say about Seattle, I feel like we said both in various outlets that what we want to say about Seattle. Basically, Mercedes Russell is a bit of an overpay. Oh, we haven't talked about the Gabby Williams deal. Let's go there. Let's go to the Gabby Williams deal.
I mean, I figured we'd get to that within LA, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk. Actually, we'll do them both. We'll put them together. I'm sure both fans of those franchises will be happy about it. So the Seattle Storm acquired Gabby Williams for Katie Lou-Samuelson and the number 8 pick in the 2022 draft.
9, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. I will double check that right now. But just like initial thoughts about the asset play here from Seattle. I think it's a pretty good use of assets, to be honest.
I was a little surprised Gabby Williams was worth that much.
Mm-hmm.
However well she plays for Sopron in in Europe. She spent 4 years in Chicago promising more than she actually delivered, as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised that she got Kalu Samuelson and a first round pick in order to acquire her, especially considering she's paid twice as much as Kalu Samuelson. So you were, as part of this deal, you're creating over $70,000 of cap space for LA. So LA were basically getting three things out of this. They got the pick, they got Samuelson, and they got cap space for one thing going the other way in Williams. So you have to think Williams is a lot better than Samuelson to make this deal, I think. And they seem convinced that Samuelson was actually going to fit in quite well last year. That doesn't seem very far off to me.
Yeah, shouts to her European production as well. That's what
well, yeah.
That's what fetched Dallas' number one pick, which honestly at this point looks like it was worse in theory, that trade for the number one pick for Kalu Samuelson. I do think Gabby Williams is substantially better than Kalu. I also think getting Stephanie Talbot kind of makes Kalu more or less redundant. So they probably knew that they were gonna bring her back. And I think that the real comparison though is like, how much better is Gabby Williams than Jordan Canada? Because they're gonna lose Jordan Canada in restricted free agency now. And I think Gabby's gonna have to fill in that role of, you know, I guess she's not really your backup one, but she's gonna be your backup guard, whatever, in kind of the same role that Jordan Canada was in. And I'd rather have Gabby Williams there than Jordan Canada. And I do think they're just going all in this season, because obviously this could be the last season of their entire ride. So I do it just because of that pressure. And that's why I like the move, is like, considering the pressure that they had on them to get better this season, I think it was a pretty good use of assets, especially with the number nine pick that was probably not going to be on your roster this upcoming season, I would guess, unless you cut like Kiki Herbert-Harrigan, maybe something like that. But I don't think that number nine pick was going to factor into their season this year. So I think it's a pretty good use of assets to get someone who's really going to help you, or at least in the theory of her should help you a lot more than the theory of Kalu Samuelson.
Maybe, like I said, I'm yet to be convinced just generally by Gabby Williams. Maybe it's partly again because I don't watch a lot of college basketball, but I don't have the grounding in how good Williams was at UConn that a lot of people do. But there were just these occasional flashes at Chicago where you thought, oh, is she working it out? Because then she becomes a hell of an asset. And then they would always just be a flash. Mm-hmm. And obviously also now she's French, which means are you going to actually see her every year? Is she going to show up every time? She's only on a one-year contract, so maybe you're not worrying too much about the future. I think she's going to start at the three more than being considered your backup. They've signed Breon January. They've still got Epiphany Prince for now, although we've talked about before that they might waive that contract because they might need the cap space, because at the minute they're paying Sue Bird about $5 to show up this season. So I don't know how great a fit Gabby Williams is, or whether she's worth the price, basically, is my concern. But then we didn't know whether Kalu was worth the price last year either, and it turned out to be, she wasn't good, but what they gave up wasn't great either. So, yeah. I don't mind the gamble if they didn't have anything else to use the cap space on. My sort of out-of-the-box theory for Seattle was to use that cap space to give Courtney Vandersloot an alternative option, because then you don't sign Breon January, you use that space and this other space that you would have had from not re-signing Jordan Canada, not making the Williams trade, and you give her somewhere else to go, and you set up your Bird successor a year before she actually retires.
Yeah, seems like that wasn't on the table though. If not, I mean, I don't know. I forgot about Breon January very briefly when I was talking about Gabby Williams. Yeah, I guess so. She starts it. I do like it though. I mean, she is someone else. She's another person to get downhill and create open shots for, you know, anyone on the perimeter. I don't think they have. I mean, Jewel. Jewel can get downhill. I don't think that's really her game, though. So I think just having someone who can really, because that's the thing that has flashed the most, at least for me, is Gabby Williams in transition. She's been great. So if they can get a little bit more transition from her, I think that alleviates some of the problems that they may have had without Jordan Canada. And you know, just replacing Breanne January with Jordan Canada, you're going to naturally have, you're going to lose some speed. So I do think it makes up for that. I'm with you, though. It's not quite a home run, but I get why the move was made. I would say, and I want to get your opinion on this, like LA won the trade. I'm assuming you think the same.
Especially considering that $70,000 of cap space, which you presume LA have plans for, rather than just created it in a vacuum and decided they wanted Katie Lou in the pick.
Yeah.
Like I said, to me, it's a trade of three things for one thing. So, and I don't think Gabby Williams is good enough as the one to be worth the three in general. So I would tend to agree that LA win on that basis.
Well, speaking of LA and their cap space and their plans, what do you think that, I mean, this has, I think it has to be in part to get Liz Cambage, or at least try to get Liz Cambage, despite her essentially saying on Twitter that she wasn't going to play in the WNBA. That's fine. I don't know how much I want to do that if I'm LA.
It obviously has its perils, as any deal with Liz Cambage has had over the years. You know, she brings baggage.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, if I'm Derek Fisher, I probably feel like I've got to try something, because last year was a shambles in LA. And is the possibility that, like, Tolliver and Chennai and Jasmine Walker are more healthy than last year enough of a prospect that you're actually going to get better?
No.
Because if they suck again, isn't Fisher getting fired?
All right. So I was talking to Sabrina Merchant about this on a previous podcast. I mean, he is his own boss.
He's the GM as well.
Yeah, he's the GM as well. And it seems like the organization is happy with him, and certainly has so much history with the Lakers that, you know, there's a lot of cachet to make him think that maybe he's not on the hot seat. I think by his performance last year as a GM, he should be on the hot seat. I actually didn't think Derek Fisher, the coach, was terrible. Just the Derek Fisher, the GM, completely hamstrung him. So I think this year, though, I get it. I get why they would think they need Liz, but I really just think, you know, run out the string here this year.
Yeah.
Let these people play. And then next year you have a whole reset. If you don't have Liz Cambage around, you're not worrying about, is she going to come? Is she going to be a problem? You're just worried about rebuilding your team next year rather than having to deal with whatever the circus might be. And it may be no circus. Liz has been drama-free at times in her career, most of the time not. But so I don't know. I think, though, if they are gonna get Liz, right, they're probably going to have to make, well, I don't know. They have $168,000 as their max bid right now.
Yeah.
But I think they might have to move off one of these guaranteed contracts by using that pick that they got from Seattle to move off either, I mean, unless Chennai retires, but it doesn't seem forthcoming, to move off of Tolliver or Amanda Zawi-B.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like these deals are dumpable, especially with that pick. If you wanted to, you know, I was talking about it again on our Slack with one of our other colleagues, that, you know, Zawi-B and the pick to Atlanta for basically nothing would presumably be something that the Dream would take. I wrote about the same thing with Chicago last year, that they were set up for a 2-year window,
mm-hmm.
which has now expired. And obviously that worked out well for Chicago, that they won a title at the end of that window. But it kind of got blown up by Candace Parker became available in the middle of it. And they said, well, screw this window we've set. Candace Parker's available. We're going to go out and get her, and that's going to make us immediately better. So if you're LA, again, they're set up for a window that ends at the end of this season, in that virtually their entire roster expires at the end of this season, and they can then go out in free agency and do whatever the hell they like.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in an ideal world, if you happen to suck again this year, maybe you fall into a Leah Boston or something like that at the end of the season, and then you've got another building block to work from.
Unless you trade up in the draft using your own pick, and then you lose that lottery pick, but that's we don't have to rehash that. Sorry.
But do you sort of see Cam Beige as the Parker in that scenario where, you know, it's the middle? You sort of think, well, if she's available and this is the time to go and get her, is now when we go. I could see them doing that. Like I said, I worry that they think if we bring this group back, we won't be good enough, and this is LA and my job will be in jeopardy. So let's go get her, because that will raise our floor more than necessarily raising the ceiling. You want to try and make sure that you're not as bad as you were last year. But yeah, standing pat would be reasonable. Play out the string, see how good this group can be. See if maybe Walker comes back and is good. See if you've got something in Cox or Garantes. Maybe use that number 9 pick and actually draft someone who you think might be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, I don't think Liz is that piece, though. I'd rather have Candace Parker, which they had, and then they lost. So I just don't think Liz is that piece. I don't think she's a player who is going to push you, especially this roster, because they already have a star. Like, their best player is a center, Nakagumaka.
Yeah, their best players are bigs. I agree. Cam Beige is not a great fit.
No, and I don't. And it would be really tough to get her enough touches, I think, to keep her happy and keep everyone happy, right? I think it's a very difficult fit, and I don't think it's someone that's going to push him over the top. It's fancy and flashy, and that seems kind of like a move that LA would make. But I think if Derek Fisher doesn't feel pressure that he's going to get fired, I would say this move is extremely unlikely, just because I don't see how that makes them so much better. And then it adds more to the disaster potential, right? Because if you get Liz Cambage and you still suck, then you're definitely getting fired. No matter if your own boss or like that, that's going to push you to getting fired. So to me, I'd be like, I'm not doing that. Unless it's for, you know, unless you can do it pretty easily. Like Shanae says, I'm not playing, although she has said she's playing, or you can get off Amanda Zowie B in an easy fashion. Or if Liz is willing to accept this offer that would be around $170,000 for 1 year, I'd do it for 1 year, but I don't want to commit to it and then have to, you know, clear out cap space, have to make a ton of moves. And then if we still fail, like now it looks so much worse. And especially for a player who doesn't really, really make a difference. Now, if you could do it for Courtney Vandersloot, 1,000%. If Courtney Vandersloot is in any way available, you make all the calls you need to James Wade in Chicago to try to figure out a way to get her to LA. Because then you're setting yourselves up at least for the next couple years with a player who can really, really change this team's trajectory. But I don't see that from Liz.
Yeah, no, that's all entirely reasonable. It feels like they're going to do something else. Because like I said, I'm not convinced that that trade with Seattle was just because we want to get Katie Lou and we like somebody in the draft that we want to spend that number 9 pick on. It feels like they were creating that 70,000, and it got 70,000 in cap space and got rid of one of their protected contracts, which went from 6 to 5. They were at the maximum of protected deals you can have in this league. They now have one spot open. So it feels like they're going to do something else. So yeah, I'd be surprised if they stand pat at this point.
Still waiting to see Emma Cannon's number. Furiously checking Twitter for this crucial bit of information. Okay, we've gone super long. Let's go rapid fire here with the rest of the teams in the WNBA. All right, I'm just going to say the team's name. You give me a take, I'll give you a take. All right, Las Vegas.
I like that they got Wilson for 2 years rather than just one. Interesting that Stokes and Raquana Williams both signed unprotected deals. Makes you wonder if they have plans for the last two protected slots.
Yeah, I agree. Ree Wilson, very interesting that she took the 2 year, because that kind of, you know, cuts into her earning potential, but she gets stability in a place that she's happy in. I like the Raquan Williams signing as an unprotected deal. Kia Stokes, though, making $11,000 more than Tina Charles's, just for the record.
No, it's 115 versus 108, isn't it? Which would make it 7,000.
Seven. I thought it was 104. My bad. In my mind. Okay, so she's making more is the entire issue.
Yes.
In any circumstance, that is not right. But whatever. Good for Tina. She doesn't care about her salary. So I like those moves though. Good for Vegas. They'll be probably near where they were last year, and if not better, depending on how fast Becky Hammon gets up to speed with this roster. Dallas, the only thing they did was sign Arike Ogunbowale to the extension that you called the whole boat extension.
I call it the full boat, yes. That is because they gave her every single possible dollar they are allowed to give her.
And to me, that is 1,000% the right move, especially considering this franchise's recent history of their superstars. Get her on board and figure it out. She's one of the hardest players to guard in WNBA. It's a lot of money, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, but they don't want to annoy her. They don't want to thinking about going somewhere else. I do think, generally speaking, when we look at these extensions, the new CBA makes extending after your third year of a rookie deal for a good player make some sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get more than the max in an extension, but you can only go to the max if you let the deal expire to your foot. But then for the team to want to do it, in general, I think we may see a little bit below the supermax, because that's the value to the team. There's value in having the player under contract and signed to your roster into the future. But there's also the value is getting a slight reduction. So generally speaking, I don't think teams will give every last dollar like Arike got. But she's a star.
Yeah.
I have seen people concerned about this deal, which is understandable because she signed for like $250,000 in 2025.
Yeah.
And she's not a perfect player. We know she can be greedy, she can be inefficient, but Dallas don't have many building blocks to work with, however young and however interesting they've been on occasion. It's mainly Arike and Sabalee. So you've locked one up. I can't blame them for making this deal. If Arike wanted to sign it, give her the contract, let her sign it.
Yeah, it's an easy decision. Because honestly, if she improves on, she's already a great player. I'm not sure, she's probably not in that elite category. She's probably still in that star category, near the top of that star category. But if she fixes a couple things in her offense, we're talking elite player. So yeah, I totally think it's the right move. And you don't want your fans worrying about her leaving. Okay, that's Dallas. Let's move on. Washington. They brought back Maisha Hines-Allen. They signed Elizabeth Williams for $90,000. What are your thoughts?
I mean, dirt cheap for Williams compared to what Dolson got, what Russell got. That's below market value, and we haven't seen that many deals signed for below market value, apart from the obvious Tina Charles. Hines-Allen, that's a big commitment. It was probably what it was all going to take to get her back, because she was going to have that interest on the market. Someone was going to sign her to that deal if Washington didn't do it themselves. So I totally understand that. But she was obviously beaten up last year, had some sort of lingering issues. You hope you're getting the player that we saw in the bubble in 2020 for that 3 years. I'm not sure we've seen it consistently enough to be certain you're getting that player for 3 years. So there's a little bit of gamble in there.
I think it's a fair risk for both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, that was what it was going to take to bring her back if you wanted to. The little sort of fringe moves they've made, and like sort of Kang Lee Sul and things like that are interesting to people like me that follow the international game. And you know, they haven't announced it yet, but they had that sort of that silhouette graphic on Twitter. And eventually people decided that one of them might well be Rui Machida, the Japanese point guard that we saw in the Olympics. So I would love to see that as well, just as a total side note.
I think it's Rui Machida. I have not heard, like, I haven't heard anything besides that yet. That made a lot of sense. And that was only because someone figured it out on Twitter, like you're saying. I don't know. I mean, maybe it could be someone else. I thought it was going to be a restricted free agent, to be honest, but we will see. I like this team. Hey, look, if it comes back to the same thing we talked about with this team since the 2019 title, if Elena Deladon is healthy, they're going to be awesome. If Elena Deladon's not healthy, they'll be less than awesome. But I like the way, I said this on the Courtside podcast, got more into it there. Like, I like the future of this team. I think they've set it up pretty well. I like Atkins, I like Hines Allen. I like getting the number one pick.
I mean, you say future, they're not that young anymore. I mean, I guess you got the number one pick coming in, which kind of helps, but that's the window's kind of now if Deladon's actually healthy rather than sort of a year or two down the line or anything. You're trying to win right this minute rather than build.
Yeah, no, but I think those two, like Atkins is 25. I think Hines Allen is also 25. So they're young enough to be around on this team for the next 5 years. And I think that Deladon window closes either this year, next year. And I don't see it going past that, to be honest. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, that's Washington. Good for them. Minnesota brought back Sylvia Fowles for her final season and signed Angel McCautry. I mean, I wish Nafisa Collier could play this year, but obviously she will miss part of the season, most of the season, who knows, by being pregnant. But I like the team. Sure, Angel's cool.
Yeah, I wrote about this during the week, as you can find on the website, as ever, that it feels like there's another shoe waiting to drop in Minnesota, in that they have too many players for their roster spots and too little cap space, and they've still got the number 8 pick in the draft, I think, to work into this equation as well. And yeah, it feels like there's a trade coming to open up something, whether it's, you know, whether it's dumping a Chonwa's deal, whether it's giving up on Dangerfield, whether it's giving up on Davis. I think something else is coming, but they're interesting. The wing group of Powers, McBride and McCautry is going to be fun to work out. You know, who starts, what's the rotation? Can the three of them actually stay healthy through a season? Does Bridget Carlton play at all anymore? Fowles deciding she wanted to play one more year. They're going to be, I mean, Reeve teams always work out a way to be at least decent. And this team has the possibility of being very good. And with the hope that Collier, you know, has the baby, recovers, and then comes back late in the year. And that would be a hell of a boost to get, you know, coming into the team in August or whenever she actually recovers.
Yeah, and Odyssey Sims did it. So, I mean, it's certainly not impossible. We're not involved in the Fisa Collier's personal life, so we don't know what's happening.
And neither of us really knows anything about recovering from pregnancy.
That is not something we know or can find out. But, the best data point we have is that Odyssey Sims did it. I don't think it's impossible for Fisa Collier to do it, if that's what she wants. The one thing I do really want to see, and I know we all want Maya Moore back, that's not going to happen. Chechi Zandalasini, get her over here, damn it. Give me 1 year of Chechi. I wrote a whole story on her before the 2020 season. Then, like, boom, COVID happens, and then the entire story got demolished, so it never came out. So I'd like to have her around so we could see her.
I mean, this is like we were talking about with Alamond and Johannes. We watch enough international basketball to be excited and intrigued by some of these players. I mean, the one advantage with Zandalasini is she's Italian rather than French or Belgian, so she doesn't have the same commitments with her international team because her international team isn't as good as with those players. It's always a good thing with international players if their international team sucks, because then they're in fewer tournaments and have fewer games to play. So hopefully, yeah, I agree. I would love to see her back in the league. We'll see if it happens.
We'll see if it happens. I'm not getting my hopes up for that. All right, Atlanta. I think we mentioned Atlanta. Did we mention Atlanta enough?
I mean, yeah.
Monique Billings comes back. Sorry, let me tell people. Monique Billings comes back for $140,000. I mean, yeah. Sorry, Monique Billings comes back for $140,000. Nia Coffey comes in for $130,000. Tiffany Hayes comes in for $215,000.
It feels like they're kicking the can down the road, doesn't it? More than anything else,
yeah.
In that a lot of these players are signing for 1 year, and they're maintaining this giant amount of cap space they had coming in until next season. And we're going to be here in 12 months saying Atlanta have a hell of a lot of cap space. Who are they chasing? I'm sure they will be in the market for Breanna Stewart, if at all possible, again as well. And anyone else who's a free agent, Necker or Gumake, anyone that wants to talk about coming to Atlanta, they will talk to in 12 months, because this team is set up to have space again next year.
And they can also, I think, looking at this roster, pretty comfortably tank for Aaliyah Boston if they so choose.
Exactly. Yes.
So Lindsay Allen is heading back to the Fever, another anxiety-inducing contract. I don't know what's happened here. Something happened on Twitter. I don't know. Moving on to our last team that we have to mention, Connecticut. They bring back Jonquel Jones, obviously, for 2 years at a discount. Bring in Courtney Williams, and we've both talked about this a ton. I like it. I think it's cool.
Yeah, given that they managed to work it out, it's something that didn't necessarily look possible, because they had very little more than about $300,000 to sign Jonquel Jones and Courtney Williams without making a trade. You thought maybe they'd have to find a home for Breonna Jones or something like that in order to be able to replace Breon January on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, Courtney Williams, partly because of everything that happened in Atlanta, was available, was unrestricted, wanted to come back. Apparently the players wanted her back. And they worked it out. They got her at a discount. They got Jones at a discount, both for this year and next year. So, yeah, great.
Good for them. And I think they're really going for it this year. And that makes everything more fun. But, you know, I want to see them get over the hump eventually. I think Courtney's going to actually help in that regard, maybe more so than other people. All right, we've officially gone through all 12 teams. It only took us an hour and a half, which to me was a little surprising, to be honest. We'll be splitting this podcast up into two parts on YouTube. You're getting the whole kit and caboodle on the audio version. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Her Hoop Stats. Subscribe to herhoopstats.substack.com to get all of Richard's work. Do you have anything in mind for next week?
I'm sure I'll be rounding up more of free agency, having done it once this week. I mean, that was before the trades and before Tina Charles and everything else. So the next part will probably have that stuff in it.
Yeah, and hopefully we can also, I don't know, maybe do some grades or something.
And obviously a massive paragraph about how much Emma Cannon has signed for.
I'm really, really anxious for this. And it hasn't come out yet, which makes me think it's not that good. And then also make sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm at Gabe_Ibrahim. Richard's at RichardCohen1.
Yep.
And you'll find a ton of salary news. And yeah, we'll be back next week talking about specific teams. I don't even know. We'll see. Maybe some crazy stuff happens and we're going to end the emergency podcast. But for Richard, I'm Gabe Ibrahim. Thanks for joining us on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network, and have a lovely day.